This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made as well as insight into the respective film itself. For this episode, we're talking to the director of Be Afraid, Drew Gabreski, which releases on video on demand June 1st. Now, Be Afraid stars Brian Krause and Jamie Page as John and Heather Chambers. They're a couple who relocate to a small town in Pennsylvania with their 7-year-old son. They also bring along John's older son from his previous marriage. Now, John is a doctor, and he begins experiencing what he believes to be sleep paralysis, haunted by visions of beings from another world, terrorizing him and his family. As he begins to realize that these may be a little bit more than dreams, John sets off to solve the mystery of these shadow beings and the Hat Man that leads them all. The film boasts a cast that also consists of Callie Thorne, oh, I love Rescue Me, Lewis Hertham, and Michelle Hurd. I really enjoyed Be Afraid and could completely see this leading to bigger things for Drew. During our interview, I talked to Drew about the journey to get this film made, from beginning as his own recurring nightmare to struggling to realize his vision with a limited budget. It's a great conversation. I think it'll give you a lot of insight into just how difficult it can be to finally bring a film to light. Now, like I said, I can tell you I really did enjoy the film. Brian Krause, who has come a long way since Charmed, and Jamie Page really carried the movie, and I personally love how they approach the sound design in the film. I know that sounds, well, really, you're focusing on sound design? But it's something that a lot of independent horror films constantly forget to even think about. So I always appreciate it when they do it right, and I think they do it well in this movie. It's a fun thriller, and it has a mythology that I feel like you can get behind, and will be available on your favorite video on demand platforms on June 1st. Without further ado, take a listen to our interview with Be Afraid director Drew Gabreski.
Hi, it's Drew Gabreski.
Hey, Drew, this is Aaron with The Hollywood Outsider. How are you?
Aaron, how are you?
I'm great. Well, let me ask you, Drew, first question I always ask anybody I ever interview. What was the moment that you knew this is what you wanted to do with your life? Was there a moment, or you just always wanted to be in filmmaking? Or?
Oh, man. I don't know if there was a moment where it just, you know, clicked, where that light switch went off. I gotta be honest. I think it's just always been in me. You know, one of my favorite stories is just talking about where I grew up, you know, growing up in Clarion, Pennsylvania on 20 acres of land out in the middle of nowhere, you know, going to a very small, you know, Catholic grade school, you know, small little public high school. I think there were like 85 people in our graduating class. I mean, a very small town. I mean, obviously Clarion has a little university there, Clarion University, but you know, I grew up with a lot of property and a big imagination. And my mother to this day tells stories about how when I was a little kid, during the summertime, I would like disappear into my room and write sequels to like my favorite films. Like, if Raiders of the Lost Ark came out at the time, I would see the film and then I'd lock myself in my room for a week and literally write a sequel to that movie.
That very much sounds like my childhood.
I was always that kid. And then, you know, probably around maybe 7, 8 years old, my uncle started sneaking me into horror films. I mean, I remember seeing like Alien, John Carpenter's The Thing, Children of the Corn. I think I saw The Exorcist and The Shining when I was like 10 years old. I mean, I never in a million years would I let my kids watch those kind of films, because now I'm a dad and I have three young children. I do let them watch scary movies, but, you know, within reason, I would never let them sit and watch The Shining or The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I that's how I was raised. And I think that imagination and that creativity has just grown through all those years. And I knew that, you know, for a long time, I thought I wanted to be an actor. Film school in UNC Wilmington, and studied under Frank Capra Jr., who was running the studio there. He was running Screen Gems there at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was auditioning a lot for the Finn Cannons, and getting little bit parts on like Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill and all the stuff that was being shot in Wilmington then. So, you know, for whatever reason, I thought that I wanted to be an actor, but luckily I studied screenwriting and directing in school. I wasn't a theater major. Mm-hmm. So then moving to LA and you know, attempting that whole pursuit in the world of acting. I don't know. There was a point, I will say this, there was a point where a light switch went off and said, you need to be behind the camera. And, you know, fortunately, because I studied acting, because I auditioned for all those years and I had those little bit parts, fortunately, I think that's helped me as a director, because I'm now able to relation and better understanding of where they're coming from, not just on the screen, but also off the screen in their own personal lives. I mean, all those struggles and frustrations and pains and the rejections and everything that they go through, I think I've got a much better understanding of you know, how I studied and what I was pursuing at the time. So my dad was adamantly against me, and this is right around when the light switch went off, against me being an actor. And I never really understood why. He was just like, you don't want to be an actor. You need to be behind the camera. You're so good at filming and writing and everything else that you do. He just did not want to see me be an actor. And then during that time, unfortunately, my father had a really bad accident and was killed.
Oh, no.
And that was honestly when the light switch went off. Because I was never able to truly understand why my dad was so adamantly against me being an actor. But in all honesty, you know, shortly after he passed away, I immediately started focusing on storytelling and directing, shooting whatever I could shoot, writing whatever I could shoot. You know, of course, I was running a restaurant at the time, just like all actors do, waiting tables, bartending, running restaurants. And I remember pulling my waitstaff away on weekends because they were all actors. And we would go off and shoot little shorts and, you know, a pilot episode that we thought we could pitch to a network. Whatever we could create and shoot, we were doing it. And we did that for years. So that was probably the light switch, to answer your question, where I at least said, you know what, I don't want to pursue acting anymore. I want to pursue directing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we are. I finally was blessed with the opportunity of getting my first film made. It's been quite the journey.
Yeah. Tell me about the journey. How did that come to be? I mean, I know you worked in the world of MMA, you were a cinematographer and that sort of thing, but how did you get here?
The movie actually kind of happened simultaneously with all the MMA stuff and, you know, VPing these like fighter features for Spike and UFC and all that craziness. But,
mm-hmm.
It kind of all happened simultaneously. So we had been, myself and a couple other producers, I've been developing, you know, projects for years. I was developing a feature with Mike Fennell and Joe Dante, and Throughline Entertainment was managing me at the time. And I had written, it was a really cool cutting edge horror script.
Mm-hmm.
This was just before the writer's strike in like 2007. And, you know, I was excited. I thought that, you know, Mike Fennell was going to end up producing this project and we were going to get like studio financing, and there was all this big talk, and then the writers went on strike and that whole deal fell apart. We were developing projects for years. We were packaging scripts, meeting with actors, chasing money. I mean, we were chasing money, chasing private financiers, you know, trying to take any meeting we can with a reputable producer in town. I mean, I was all over the map for years, you know, just trying to get that first feature made. And then this project came to me. I want to say it came to me in probably 2012, 2013 initially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was developing at the time, I was developing a short film about the Hat Man, based off of this reoccurring nightmare that I used to have as a kid. I had this reoccurring nightmare as a child that the Hat Man would come to visit me, you know, in my dreams. And he'd come out of the woods and walk down the dirt road and come down my driveway and up the steps and into my bedroom. And he would literally stand there and watch me sleep. And that was my nightmare.
That's a good nightmare.
And the nightmare was so, like, I knew I was asleep in the nightmare, because I was always terrified to wake up, because God forbid this entity, this man, this Hat Man was freaking standing there in my room, right? So I was always like scared to wake up and look. And this went on for months. I mean, it wasn't every night, maybe once a week, once a month, but I remember it went on for quite some time. And my parents were, you know, they were trying to convince me that it's not real, it's a dream, and this thing's not really coming into my room. And sure enough, man, the very last time I had that dream, I woke up and that thing was standing in my room, looking down at me in my bed. And wow. And eerily enough, that was the last time I ever had that nightmare. So years later, here I am, I'm wanting to write and develop a short film based off of this nightmare that I used to have as a kid. And the DP, Scott Peck, who's the DP of the film, who's a colleague of mine, and Scott and I have worked together for a long time on various projects. Scott said, dude, you know, I've got a buddy who's a writer who wrote a script that sounds really similar to what you're wanting to develop. You should read the script. And that was Gerald Knott. Gerald Knott had written a script primarily about shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the script and I was immediately attracted to it. There was no Hat Man entity. It was all about shadow people and, you know, they can't survive in the light. They hide in the dark and they come out of the shadows and they literally grab you and pull you into like the abyss. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened after I read the script, I Googled shadow people. Mm-hmm. And it just opened up this whole world of mythology and pictures and blogs and, you know, all kinds of crap. I had no idea that there was this huge, like, following, this cult phenomenon about shadow people. So I started researching it, and all of a sudden I come across this Hat Man figure, and man, did the hair raise off my back, wow. You know, off my arms. I immediately got goosebumps. I'm reading these blogs where these, like, 40, 50-year-old adults are talking about how when they were a kid, this Hat Man figure would come to them and visit them. And I'm like, dude, this is my nightmare. This is what I experienced. And I went to Jerry and I said, Jerry, have you researched any of this? And Jerry's like, no, man, I just had this great idea and I just ran with it. And I said, you gotta Google shadow people. You gotta see like the it was insane, you know, and you probably know this mm-hmm. and the space you're in, and it's insane. And then to discover this Hat Man figure and then seeing pictures of it and going, holy crap, that is the thing that came into my room as a kid. So then I started thinking, dude, there's some really deep, dark stuff going on here. You know, like what's really happening? Why are we as children all experiencing this? You know, there was no Freddy Krueger back then. I hadn't seen Nightmare on Elm Street didn't exist. There was none of that. This was something that a lot of us have experienced, we all have in common. So I basically, you know, convinced Jerry that we needed the Hat Man in the script. And Jerry and I, you know, went back to the drawing board. And at the time, we got introduced to Courtney Solomon and After Dark. And After Dark loved the draft and said, listen, you know, if we give you notes, will you guys, you know, do a rewrite for us? We're interested. We could potentially want to finance this for you guys. So we wrote for After Dark probably for a good year. Maybe,
mm-hmm.
I would say maybe 2-3 drafts, maybe not a year, maybe 6 months, 2 or 3 drafts. And it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where I remember having a call with their development exec at one point and saying, you realize the script's probably a $2 million project now, right? And they're like, oh yeah, we're not worried about money. It's all good. Yeah, we know it's big. You know, they were all about, they wanted it all. They wanted to know what these things were, where they're coming from, what their agenda is, what do they want from this family, who's the Hat Man, what does he want? And we knew all that, but they wanted it all on the page. And that was a little hard for us because Jerry and I, we're not ones to like beat you over the head with the material.
Mm-hmm.
We want to leave some of it up to the imagination of the audience. I think it's way more interesting. I think less is more. And I think leaving it up to the imagination of the audience and letting the audience kind of decide and go down that rabbit hole and think about what they think is happening and where these entities are coming from. And you know, and then, you know, in a beautiful world, right, we get well received, we get a sequel, and then we're able to let more of that story out in the second and third film instead of just like vomiting it all out in the first film,
right.
Like most of these companies, production companies want you to do nowadays. You know, we just didn't want to do that. Well, we did it for After Dark because they were telling us they were going to finance the film. So the script got really big, and then something happened where like Courtney ran out of money, and I don't even know if they're still around, if After Dark's still making films, but it kind of fell apart, and they basically told us that they lost their financing. We shelved it. So we shelved the project, and then I went on to, I was developing something for television in the MMA space, And then literally we got this phone call out of nowhere that we had a group of private investors that had read the script and they loved it and they wanted to sit down and have a meeting with us. And I mean, dude, from there, it was fast. Maybe 6 months from that first sit down, 5 months, we were financed. We had the money in the bank. We started casting. We went out to Pennsylvania. We scouted all of our locations. We had to do a massive rewrite because the budget was small. We were nowhere near the budget that we were at with the draft for After Dark. So we had to, we had to cut way back, which I think in some ways it's okay. I think we have a better film. And I think in other ways we may have had too small of a budget at some certain points that I could give you more detail if needed. But yeah, man, they just came out of nowhere after all those years of pounding the pavement, meeting after meeting, developing projects, writing scripts. I mean, I'm sitting on an arsenal right now of horror material, like literally an arsenal, whether it's in treatment form or full length scripted feature form, we are sitting on an arsenal. So obviously our prayers here are that this film is well received and it does enough of a bang for us that, I can then go on to make my next film and I'm not necessarily back, pounding pavement, trying to independently raise money to go make another feature. But no, I mean, the in many ways, the dream is coming to fruition. I have definitely visualized this for many years. You know, I'll tell you what, when I pulled on the set day one, and I remember pulling up and looking out the window and seeing all the trucks, and I didn't even expect all that. I've worked on enough indie, low budget productions, and I've worked on big productions in various different roles, and I didn't expect to see what I saw when I pulled in a set that morning. It was like 6 a.m. It was about 20 degrees outside, and there were trucks at our first location, Star Wagons, Gripping Electric, and I remember looking out the window and going, I had a small moment of holy shit, but the minute the car stopped and the door opened and I stepped out, I never once again had that moment of holy shit. Like I knew what to do. I knew what was put before me. I knew what tools I had. I knew the amazing cast that I had casted with the incredible help of Linda LaMontagne. Everything had come together. Of course, we had challenges like all productions have, bad weather and, we're trying to make this big script in 18 days in one camera. And we did it. We shot the entire film in 18 days. I think we had to go one day over because our water truck froze one night. We were doing a big thunder and lightning storm scene and the water pump literally froze because it got so cold. It was so cold outside that, put it this way, the rain was turning to snow.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cold.
And then we had shut down for a while. Yeah, we had shut down for a while, and they had something happened where it froze up, so we had to come back the next night and finish the scene. So that set us back, like a half day. But that was it. I mean, we pulled it off. We did it in 18 days, and here we are. Hopefully it'll get received well. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, it's okay. There's a question I want to ask you in terms of, this is your first feature. You have a lot of elements to it. You have a solid cast. You have the creature design, which I thought was a standout. You have the music and sound design, which I thought was great. It very a Babadook feel, I guess is the way I would put it, where it's very, very important to the story, and where there are elements where you use it, elements where you don't. What was the most complicated or difficult aspect for putting this together? With a horror movie, you have a lot of different elements. What was the most complicated or difficult part for you?
The hardest thing for me was the monsters. It was going into this with an extremely low budget. I think the name of the company was Monster Effects. They're based out of Burbank, I believe. Good group of guys. The hardest thing for me was going into it with this low budget and building monsters that were compelling and real and scary. Having somebody like the guy that created Alien and having all the money in the world, that's easy. Like I could do that with my eyes closed. But trying to figure out how are we gonna make these things scary, you know, and I had people telling me, well, just don't show them. And I'm like, what do you mean don't show them? What do you mean? You got to show the monsters. I mean, you know, obviously it can be really dark in realistic lighting situations because it's at night and you're in the woods, and we can bring more of a realistic look to it. But how are we going to make these things badass and make them scary? That was probably the most difficult part. And then adding to that was the lack of post-production budget. We knew going into this we would have no CGI. Mm-hmm. Our post-budget was so small that we knew, like, if we screwed any, like, we weren't shooting a movie where we're like, oh, we'll fix it in post. That never once came up. Not one time we'll fix it in post. Because we knew there was probably a damn good chance we wouldn't be able to fix it in post. And we would run into a big wall and be in trouble. So, you know, we shot everything in camera. All of the effects, all of the blur and the different distortion and camera speed, that was all shot in camera with real practical, you know, monster effects and, you know, head-to-toe creature suits. That was all premeditated and created from scratch, and it was definitely the hardest thing. Yeah, I mean, that was it. And then, you know, the other thing that was super difficult was we had one or two really big scenes in the script that it just came down to it. They just weren't for this film, for this budget. You know, we had the, did you see the film, Aaron?
Yeah, absolutely. I did. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
You're able to watch it. So, you know, we had in my mind, what was our big side? It was our big cinematic payoff moment. We had that period, that big payoff moment. It was in the script. Mm-hmm. But when we got out there and the weather and the elements, we're shooting in these old abandoned railroad tunnels. We were in there one night. I think our longest day was like almost a 17-hour day. And we were in one of those tunnels. Mm-hmm. And it got down to about 10 degrees. There was probably a wind chill of -5, -10. I mean, it was brutal. It was brutal. And our guys, our crew did an incredible job and hung in there like rock stars. But we knew that, you know, Scott Peck and I, we were constantly pulling each other aside and having very detailed discussions. We both had this commitment to one another that if we didn't believe it was going to look right, we wouldn't shoot it. You know, there was none of this, oh, we'll shoot it later, or we'll go back to L.A. and raise more money and try to get a stage day and recreate this. There was none of that. It was literally like, how do we make what we have work within the budget and the perimeters that are in front of us? And that's it. That was what we were up against, and that was extremely difficult, you know, almost every day dealing with that. But at the end of the day, I feel like we have a good little film, and, you know, sure, I would love to make this version of a movie. I'd love to make the $10 million version of the big script that we were writing for After Dark. That would be incredible. You know, it is what it is.
I like this ending. I thought this ending, I was actually expecting a much bigger ending. I enjoyed it more that it wasn't.
Okay.
I get cool. I get where it would go, but I kind of would wish it would be. I like the way it ended. You talked about a sequel, so you could see this going another film or another couple films if things succeed.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, Aaron, I mean, look, there is something, this whole genre, this whole subgenre of shadow people, and especially the Hat Man. I mean, dude, the Hat Man is no joke. The stuff that is on the internet and the backstory, the mythology, I mean, there are accounts of the Hat Man that go back to like the 1940s. Yes, by all means, I believe that we're sitting on something potentially really, really big. And I think what needs to happen is we need to get a following. Mm-hmm. We need to get people behind this film that accept it for what it is, knowing that there's something so much bigger that can come from this, mm-hmm. where we could go to like a New Line Cinema and say, hey, look at what we did for, you know, under $1 million. And we've exposed and introduced this whole Hat Man figure. Now let's do it right. I mean, we've got the sequel. We've got the storylines. We've got it all figured out where we want to go with this. It's now just a matter of, you know, Hollywood's a business. I get it. It's all about business. So if they think that there's a lot of money that can be made off of this IP, then we're off to the races. I totally get it. And we'll see what happens. You know, my fingers are crossed, and I'm just gonna keep keep thinking positive thoughts, and hopefully we'll be blessed to get a sequel and be able to do something that much bigger, you know, for part two.
I hope so too. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing if it can go any further. I really want to know where it goes.
Well, awesome, man. I appreciate all your kind words and thanks for your time, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, good luck on the release, and we'll talk soon, I hope, maybe for the next one.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with director Drew Gabreski on his new film, Be Afraid. Once again, I did enjoy it. Please check it out. It's coming out June 1st. I think you're going to enjoy it if you love horror films or you just want something new and fresh. And I love the concept of the Hat Man and Shadow People. And after the interview, I did Google what Drew was talking about. And there is a whole world. There's like a whole underworld for this Shadow People and the Hat Man phenomenon that I wasn't aware of. Had no idea. So go check that out. After the movie, go Google Shadow People and the Hat Man. It's a real thing. I thought he was joking for part of that interview until after. And I'm like, I got to go check this out. And turns out now I'm terrified. So thanks a lot. Thanks for that, Drew. I appreciate it. Remember, June 1st, it is available on video on demand. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your podcast app of choice is. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch the video on demand release of Be Afraid, buy popcorn.